Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Now I see why you're so worn out, Frank announced, plopping down beside his wife, Faye, on the sofa. I can't remember when I've had such a long day. First, Ellie threw a temper tantrum when she found out her red pants were in the wash. Then she had a tug-of-war with a kid in the park sandbox. Then she insisted on only having carrot sticks and peanut butter for lunch. And then I had to read The Cuddly Teddy Bear at least 3 times before she could even settle down for a nap. I'm sure glad you weren't gone all day.
Congratulations, you're a full-fledged member of the club, Faye laughed. Ellie is a handful. Lots of 4-year-olds are, but Dr. Spencer says her temperament is a big factor.
Well, you can't blame that part on me, Frank chuckled. You know I'm the laid-back type.
Yes, yes, Faye agreed. That's how you can tolerate so many of my relatives. And I guess I just have to remember how my mom said I acted while I was growing up, although Ellie's sort of bull-in-the-china-shop behavior can be pretty embarrassing. We'll have to figure out some tricks that'll calm us all down when we need them.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our children's temperaments? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has written a book that deals with these kinds of issues. Claire Lerner is a child development specialist and director of parent education at 0 to 3. She is the co-author of 0 to 3's latest book for parents, Bringing Up Baby, 3 Steps to Making Good Decisions in Your Child's First 3 Years. She also writes a bi-monthly column on young children's behavior for American Baby magazine. Ms. Lerner also provides training on a range of early childhood issues to professionals in the field. She holds a master's degree in social work from New York University and is the mother of 2 children, Jessica, 11, and Sam, 14. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Claire.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So, is it true that babies are born with a certain temperament?
Well, indeed it is. And I think that that's something for parents to keep in mind as they begin to get to know their child and learn the best ways to respond to them, because as Sandy's story illustrated, it can be very intense and challenging sometimes, and reminding ourselves as parents that temperament is not something their child chose, it's not something the parent created, can lift some of that burden of feeling like I made my child this way and free them to really clearly understand who their child is and how to best respond.
What kinds of cues do especially young children give to their parents to let them know what they're really like?
Well, actually, lots of clues. And many parents can identify specific clues about temperament as early as 4 to 6 months. So, for example, by 6 months, many parents, when asked, can describe a sort of a typical way that their child reacts to, for example, new situations. Even at 6 months, you know, going to a new playgroup, there are certain kids who crawl right in or roll around with the other babies and just show a lot of eagerness in their body language, where other children want to hold back, maybe cling to mom, need a lot more time and reassurance to feel comfortable in new situations. And that's a very important temperamental characteristic, how children approach new situations and new people. So parents very early on can detect, you know, those kind of temperament traits, even activity level, the amount of activity a child engages in during the day. Already by 6 months, many parents will say, you know, my baby, you know, needs to be in constant motion, even though they may just be learning how to crawl. They're just very action-oriented, where another parent might describe a child who really likes to sit back and be an observer and takes in everything around him before he may act on a situation.
Are there certain kinds of factors that do influence a child's temperament?
Well, certainly. And that's the good news, is that while children are born with a certain temperament, parents have a lot of influence in shaping the way a child develops and how that temperament gets expressed over time. What's important to be clear about here is the goal is not to change a child's temperament. It's really to respect and understand their approach to the world and then be able to help the child make adaptations as necessary. So you want to build on the strengths of their temperamental traits while at the same time helping them adapt. So for example, in the case example that you shared earlier, Sandy, in that situation, we would describe a child like that, just given that, you know, brief scenario, as sort of an intense, feisty kid, a kid who, you know, nothing rolls off their back. They absorb everything and their reactions are very big. So whereas, you know, I think of sometimes, you know, three babies lined up and an ambulance drives by and one baby, you know, is totally intrigued and, you know, is eager to be, you know, watching it and very curious. Another baby doesn't even respond to it, doesn't even register for that baby. And then a third baby completely loses it. And that's mm-hmm. because they have very different ways of taking in information and reacting to it. And so a child like the one you described, I forgot her name.
Ellie.
We would describe as an intense reactor. She takes in information and has big reactions to it. She might be the kid who completely lost it, perhaps, when the ambulance drove by because it was so much to handle. And so children like that can be intensely passionate. They are kids who make things happen, you know, are just incredibly creative and imaginative, very spontaneous and fun to be around. But they also can have a very hard time managing their emotions, and that can get them into trouble. And so as a parent of a child like Ellie, you want to really encourage that passion and excitement for life, which makes her such an interesting and probably very smart little girl. But you also then want to help her learn over time how to manage her emotions, how to help her calm down, validate her feelings, but really help her figure out other ways to express herself. And in addition, many kids like that do something very similar to Ellie, which is they need a high level of predictability in their world to feel safe because they take in so much, they get overwhelmed very easily. Again, nothing's rolling off their back. They're absorbing it all. So they do rely on predictability. So they can have tantrums for things like their favorite Red Bull not being available for their cereal that day. That can propel a tantrum because it's just unexpected. I have cereal. It's always in a Red Bull. And so in those kind of situations, you don't want to, you know, just always give the Red Bull, or conversely, get very rigid and say, well, you can never have the Red Bull. You need to deal with real life. But something in between where you might acknowledge, you know how important it is. I know you love your Red Bull. It's not available today. So let's see if we can make another choice. And then acknowledge the need, but then help her learn how to maybe pick the yellow or the blue one that day. So it's really an incremental process that really requires the parent being respectful and sensitive while also figuring out, what am I trying to help my child adapt to and how can I do that in a sensitive way?
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on temperament in early childhood.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Claire Lerner about temperament in early childhood.
You describe some different kinds of temperament in your book, Bringing Up Baby, Three Steps to Making Good Decisions in Your Child's First Years. But in the book, you explain that it's really a continuum. Would you sketch in for us a little bit more some of the major points along such a continuum?
Yes, well, that's a very good and important point. In the book, we might describe sort of the both extreme ends of the continuum. So, for example, sociability, how you react to new people. On the one end of the continuum, there are the kids who are eager and jump in and go to the playground and immediately make friends and jump into the action very comfortably. And on the other end of the continuum are the kids who are extremely fearful and cautious and anxious, you know, and really cling to their parents for dear life and need a lot of time to feel safe and comfortable before they're willing to jump in and be willing to, you know, interact with new people. But then most children really fall somewhere in between. So if you can almost picture it as a continuum and kind of plot, you know, where's your child closer to? Well, you know, I have a child who is slow to warm up. However, he's not on that far end of the continuum, but he certainly is fearful of new situations and does need to talk about it and to think about how it might feel now that he's older. You know, we have strategies you continue to use throughout life. So while the book is geared to children, you know, birth to three, really the principles apply to really parenting children of all ages. So in his case, he's not on the end of the continuum, but he is slow to warm up, and I need to be sensitive to that so I can help him learn how to over time feel more comfortable in new situations. And again, you know, thinking about the example I gave a little earlier about the ambulance, I think that's a nice way of thinking about the continuum, that on one end you have the one who doesn't even acknowledge the, you know, the ambulance coming by. That's a child who is a low reactor and may need parents to be very stimulating to engage them, really, you know, make lots of face-to-face contact and really find ways to get them engaged, where on the other end you have a kid who even the slightest amount of stimulation can be distressing. And then again, and that's the kid who, you know, completely loses it. And then you have that child in the middle who's interested, eager, curious. It's just the right amount of sights and sounds and stimulation to get him engaged. And he sort of would represent that middle. Actually, in the book, one of the things we felt was very important to do was to not just describe the different temperamental traits and this continuum, but also to give parents very specific ideas for how they might respond to kids at the different ends of the continuum. Always respecting that parents need to take these suggestions and adapt them based on what they know about themselves or their child.
Speaking of which, in our family, I was thinking of a situation with some generational gaps where my grandmother was very outgoing and dynamic. Her daughter, my mother, was very quiet and introspective. I was more of an outgoing type. One of my children is very quiet and introspective. It's an interesting sort of every other generation. But how can parents sort of adapt what their temperament is to something productive in dealing with a child whose temperament doesn't have anything to do with that?
Another very, very important question, because that can be a real challenge when you as a parent have a very different approach to the world and temperament than your child. And we think of this as sort of the goodness of fit, you know, that sometimes the fit between parent and child, you know, quite honestly, is just not that in sync. And it's not something to feel bad about, and it's not a negative. It's just a fact. Acknowledging it is absolutely critical. It's the critical first step, is recognizing and being able to separate. Who am I as a person? What are my beliefs and values? What makes me feel good? So that you can then really look very carefully and objectively, which is so hard, at who is my child? What is he telling me through his behaviors and the patterns I see? What is he telling me about who he is and what he needs? So that is the absolute first most important step, is self-awareness and recognizing where those differences are. Next, it's being able to not project your own ideas of what makes people happy and what's good for your child based on your own needs. Again, I have to say, as a parent of, you know, older children now, that continues to be, I think, the biggest challenge, is really being able to see your child as a separate being and not project your own fantasies. So if you're a parent who really values athletics and being really skilled at using your body, and sports for you was really important because you loved being part of a team and you made lots of friends and it kept you in shape and all those wonderful things, and you have a child who couldn't care less about playing with balls or, you know, being really active, and he's maybe a kid who spent hours with building blocks and little action figures and is perfectly happy and is learning a tremendous amount through that kind of activity. The challenge is really, how do you manage your own feelings and reactions to that so that you can really support your child and build on his strengths? It's also very important to encourage your child to have a range of experiences. So having said what I just said, at the same time, if you have a child who is not very active, but you also know as a parent that being active is important and being able to enjoy activity with others is important, that you don't sort of just force him and say, I've signed you up for, you know, tot soccer tomorrow and throw him in with the wolves, you know, but you create experiences where he can enjoy using his body and interacting with other kids in ways, though, that feel right to him. So, for example, I remember a family that I worked with who had, you know, similar concerns and issues because both parents were very active and just, you know, were dying when their, you know, baby became a toddler to go to the playground and really enjoy the outdoors with him and active exploration. Child had very little interest in that. And what they ended up doing was a child with a wonderful imagination. And so here's an example of what I would say would be a very sensitive way of acknowledging their needs, but also helping broaden their experience. And so what they started to do was just take a blanket and bring his little stuffed animals and the pretend toys and have a picnic in the playground, and then slowly, you know, talk about what the other kids were doing, and then brought his favorite stuffed animal and made a whole game out of the stuffed animal exploring the playground. And the next thing you know, he's going down the slide with the stuffed bear, and all of a sudden, the playground is no longer a scary or not very exciting experience for him or desirable experience, but in fact, one that he now eagerly looks forward to. So he may never be a baseball player or a soccer player or whatever, but, you know, sort of interacting with your child in that way and moving him along and giving him opportunities based on his interest to expand his world, and continuing to do that may very likely broaden this child's world, and he may actually become interested in other endeavors that the parents thought he might never.
And clearly they've enabled him to develop some of the skills to be more comfortable when he's put in those situations.
Exactly. So that's another question I often help parents think about, which is, what are the skills you want your child to have when he goes to kindergarten? And then as they experience the world with him early on is, okay, he has a hard time in groups, but kindergarten is going to require functioning in a group for many hours a day and learning to share and negotiate different personalities and not being able to be first all the time and all the things that kids need to be able to do to be successful in kindergarten. So I would encourage parents to see everyday moments as opportunities to help him learn how to feel comfortable in a group.
Yeah, that's a wonderful mantra, see everyday moments as opportunities for whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think it is, especially in today's world with parents feeling like they have to sign their kids up for all sorts of classes in order to make their baby smarter and more competent, that in fact it's really the everyday moments that are the best opportunities.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on temperament in early childhood.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Claire Lerner about temperament in early childhood. You mention a three-step method for making decisions about basic parenting issues. That includes the importance of temperament. Would you explain how this practice works?
Yes. Yeah, so, and in fact, I began to actually spell out that process earlier on without identifying it, so it won't be so hard to make that leap, which is that the three-step process is, one, self-awareness, knowing yourself, what you bring to the relationship, the things we talked about earlier, what's my own temperament, what are my beliefs and values, what are my goals. And step one is critical because until you do that self-awareness piece, it's very, very hard to see your child as a separate being because you're always projecting and just not sort of creating that boundary to be able to look at them objectively. Step two is tuning into your child. what's going on with him developmentally? What skills is he working on? What is he capable of doing? What are my expectations? What can they be of him right now? And what's his temperament? You know, who is this child so that I can respond to him in the most effective ways, which is step three, which is taking what you know about yourself and what you know about your child to do step three, which is respond in effective, flexible ways that nurture his development. So it's really the antithesis of the one-size-fits-all approach. If your baby's crying, do this. If they have sleep trouble, do that. If they're not toilet training, we don't believe at all, as most parents don't, that there is a one-size-fits-all approach. And so really the goal in this book was to help give parents an approach and a model. And actually one example is very much the family I just described, where they tuned into themselves, they knew what their beliefs, values, and goals were, were then able to put that aside to understand what their own individual child needed, which was very different. And then step three, for example, that trip to the playground where they responded in a way that took into consideration both their goals and desires for him and his own separate needs in order to respond effectively to nurture his development.
Now, here's a lovely monkey wrench most parents will relate to immediately. What happens when you put siblings into the mix?
Well, it gets very complicated.
At minimum.
Yes. And as you know, most parents will tell you, it's like starting from scratch, and all the tricks that they finally figured out with the first, you know, don't work with the second. And so what's very important, I guess the thing I feel is most important, because obviously this could be an entirely other mm-hmm. show just devoted to siblings, is kids really take their lead and their cues from parents about how to think about each other. And so one, the most important thing, I think, is for parents to really stay focused on honoring each child for who they are as a separate being and for what they bring, and not comparing, but really honoring and valuing. So an example of that would be in my family, my daughter is a discriminating eater. Okay, we don't use the word picky.
Oh, I love this.
Discriminating eater.
Love the vocabulary.
And that's because she's a very sensitive kid. And she, you know, takes in, her olfactory senses are very powerful. And so for her, you know, even the smell of a little tomato sauce is very overwhelming. I finally began to understand that part of her discrimination was certain things just smelled and tasted very different to other people who are less discriminating and will eat anything, which describes my son. So, you know, that would become a constant source of teasing that, you know, he was the one who would eat anything and she would eat nothing. And what I really tried focused doing is saying, you know what, everybody takes in, smells and tastes very differently. You do it one way, Jessica does it another. Both ways are good, they're just different. And that was sort of the model that I try and sort of implement. It doesn't always work, and I you know, fall into the same traps all parents do, but I think you can do that about a lot of things. You know, one kid's very active, the other kid likes to be more, you know, sit quietly and is more sedentary in their play. Again, you know what? You love to be active all the time, and that's what's made you really good at sports, because you're always on the move. You use your body all the time. That's wonderful. And you know what? Johnny is so busy using his mind and figuring things out that he's amazing at puzzles and taking things apart and putting them back together. Those are both incredible skills that I love so deeply about both of you. Now, that doesn't answer the whole question, but I do think approaching siblings that way from very, very early on can prevent a lot of the sibling issues that you see later on, because they feel much less in competition and they feel very valued for who they are, and they learn to respect each other's differences.
I think that's a very interesting thing. That's what we have both found in our families, that our children have been forced by the nature of being a sibling to respect some character traits that they wouldn't have gone near mm-hmm. if they were choosing a friend. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. They've all grown up
to be
very respectful.
Why I have to, you know, have siblings can be very important. And if you have an only child, why it's so important to really provide them lots of experiences, developing some close relationships and learning how to respect differences and to negotiate interacting with people who are very different than them, not just racially or ethnically, but even just temperamentally and, you know, personality wise.
And that's interesting, because when you think, when you would choose a friend, you would choose a friend whose temperament mm-hmm. would connect with yours. But if you have a sibling whose temperament has nothing to do with yours, mm-hmm. then you're sort of forced mm-hmm. into a situation where you can have constant battles or you can learn to mm-hmm. respect it.
Exactly.
That's good.
Now it's time to see if we can give some resources to our listeners. In addition to your book, Bringing Up Baby, Three Steps to Making Good Decisions in Your Child's First Years, what other resources about temperament in early childhood would you suggest?
Well, I would certainly encourage parents to go to the 0-3 website because there's a lot more on temperament there as well as lots of other developmental information. That's www.0-3.org. In addition, there's a wonderful tool that parents can take advantage of through an organization called the Preventive Ounce. And you can Google them. I think it's basically thepreventiveounce.org. They're very easy to find. And there's actually a tool you can use where you answer lots of questions about your child's approach to the world. And it generates some interesting information, of course, that you need to adapt to your own situation and what you know about your child, because no computer program can ever know that. I have found it very, very useful. And also there is a very nice small book called Temperament Tools that is very easy to get through and lays out a lot of different issues around temperament. And again, that's called Temperament Tools.
Well, we are very lucky because you have given us a lot of parenting tools today. So, Claire Lerner, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to understand temperament.
Well, thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller today is an autographed copy of Claire Lerner's book, Bringing Up Baby, Three Steps to Making Good Decisions in Your Child's First Years. Please call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 252. Please spell anything that's not obvious. It's very hard sometimes on the answering machine to hear clearly. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Adele M. Thomas Charitable Foundation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.